workshop series, as I just said. Anyone that was here last week want to give us a little synopsis? What are we talking about? A trellis, life in the vine, okay.
Coming fall in.
Right. Yes, what it means to produce fruit, what it means to, as Barb said, life in the vine, what's that?
Be rooted.
Be rooted in Jesus, right? There was another word we used last week that had less to do with plants and more to do with some other, what's that? Yeah. Well, that hopefully this sermon series will do it. We did talk about pruning. Disciple, apprentice, yes, right. So we're discovering a little bit more about what it means to be a disciple or an apprentice of Jesus and how it's really a lifestyle thing. And when we say that Jesus saved us, that's great, but he's also our master. And we are trying to imitate him. And so this series is about ways, actual, in our real life ways that we can start to imitate him. And so I thought it would work better if everybody was participating, since it's actually about our participation in life. And I want to say something interesting. This is interesting to me anyway. I am the type of person, maybe some of you are like this too, that when something is a fad, I am suddenly really not into it. Unless I got into it before I realized it was a fad. Right? So this rule of life thing is something that I started to come into, this trellis thing, something I started to come into last year, and I knew very few people who knew anything about it. And after my sermon last Sunday, somebody said, oh, my pastor preached the exact same thing. And somebody else was teaching about it somewhere else, and a couple of other people were like, oh my word, my life is so out of control. I really need some kind of structure. And it's just been like one thing after another. So I feel like when that kind of thing happens, I feel like God is doing something with his people, not just here, but everywhere, inviting us into this abundant life that Jesus promised, inviting us into this rooted life of apprenticeship to Jesus. And that requires something of us, but it's also super exciting because it's an invitation. And the theme, I think, of this series is really that verse from Matthew 11 that we talked about last week, where Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon me and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And so we are in the process of discovering what Jesus' easy yoke and light burden actually is like. Today, we're going to break our lives apart into different components. These are all areas through which we can bear fruit, or through which Jesus wants to bear fruit through us. And today we're going to talk about time. And time is actually sort of, could be the trellis itself. Because everything else, every other aspect of our lives happens in time, right? You have your friendships and you spend time with your family and you spend time at work and you spend time sleeping. And like, time is over all of the stuff. So we could almost say that time is the trellis itself. And how do we build a good one? And then everything else is the fruit that grows and is supported by the trellis. So hopefully you have a notebook. If you don't, I have two extras. Anybody need? Okay, we're gonna do something with these right now. And depending on what size of notebook you have, this size and bigger, you can probably do it all on one page, but if you have a little tiny notebook, you can actually do a page for each thing. Put time across the top of your page, and you need a section for days, weeks, months, quarters, and years. After you make your little grid, I'm going to give you 30 seconds. seconds to write in whatever comes to mind that you do either on a daily or regular basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis, a quarterly basis, a yearly basis. This isn't going to be comprehensive. Just whatever comes to mind right away, write it down in those boxes of stuff that you do. Doesn't matter if you think it's a good thing or a bad thing, just things that you do in time in those particular categories. And I'm going to time you right now. Good thing I wasn't in the pulpit. I wouldn't have room for all this stuff. Okay, so based on the stuff that you wrote down in your time blocks, just in 30 seconds, what would you say your time, who or what would you say your time actually belongs to? Who's in charge of it? But look at what's in there. Maybe that is, yeah. You are in charge of it, okay. Work. Retired. Money, okay. Family. Yeah. I think that's pretty normal. None of those things sound out of the ordinary to me. And actually, we're going to talk about all of those things in the coming weeks. So, so that's great. And how do you feel about that? Those things being the ones that are in charge of your time? Yeah. That's actually, I love the honesty. It's, yeah, sometimes I think, at least I've had this experience, I feel resentful about the things that are demanding my time. I haven't felt that way recently, but, well, actually, I lied. Never mind. Forget I even said that. Yeah, I identify with that. Okay, so we're going to look briefly again at Psalm 90, which Bernice read for us, and I'm going to ask, because I have all this stuff, but I don't have a Bible up here. So can I either borrow somebody's Bible or, yeah, I'll just... Okay, so I'm going to read this through once. We're not going to do Lectio Divina like we sometimes do. I'll read it through, write down all the words in a separate piece of paper in your notebook, all the words that you hear that are time-related, so not just days or years or whatever, but also things like mortal or ancestor or generations, or I don't remember what's all in here, but anything that is related to time. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born or you brought forth the whole world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn people back to dust, saying, "Return to dust, you mortals." 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. Yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death. They are like the new grass of the morning. In the morning it springs up new, but by evening it is dry and withered. We are consumed by your anger and terrified by your indignation. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. All our days pass away under your wrath. We finish our years with a moan. Our days may come to 70 years or 80 if our strength endures, yet the best of them are but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. If only we knew the power of your anger. Your wrath is as great as the fear that is your due. Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Relent, Lord. How long will it be? Have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, for as many years as we have seen trouble. May your deeds be shown to your servants, your splendor to their children. May the favor of the Lord our God rest on us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. So, what are some of the time-related words that you noticed? Generations? Everlasting.
Payment is due by.
What's that?
Payment is due by.
Okay.
1,000 years.
1,000 years. Yeah, spring up anew. Mm-hmm.
Number our days.
Everlasting. Night, morning. What? Dwelling. How is that time related? Okay, well, hang on to that word. How long? Return. Yeah. Awesome. So what is this poem? It's a psalm, so it's a poem, right? It kind of has ups and downs in it, right? Kind of big ups and downs. What does the poet seem to be saying about time and its relationship to God and people?
Very short.
He's in charge, okay. Time doesn't mean much to him. Maybe not. Yeah. We need him. Okay. He's going to go on forever. So this is, I think this poem, this psalm, is a prayer acknowledging God as the Lord of time and asking for help for us to spend time wisely. So here's the thing. Our relationship to time is very short, like you all said. And it says it in this psalm. We fly away. We wither like grass. Our struggles are basically a blip on the screen, of eternity, and then they just disappear on our own. If time is only mine, if I say it's my time, I'm going to decide how to spend it, or I give the ownership of my time to somebody else, everything we do here, even the good stuff, the promotions, the good works, going to a war-torn country and doing relief work, all of that stuff is going to wither and fly away too. And I think all of us have probably had an experience where we've been doing something and we either think, what is the point of this? Or we realize that it has a point, it is a good work, but it still feels pointless. And that's almost even more disturbing because it's like, I know I'm doing something that matters, but it doesn't feel like it matters when something else is in charge of our time. On our own, we are less than time. We are smaller than time. Time is this big thing that we are just swept away in and forgotten. In relation to God, verse 1 says, Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the earth and the world from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. God is greater than time. He is not affected by time. He is bigger than time. So, if God himself is our dwelling place, if we are rooted in him, then if we are living as if time is actually his, not ours, not our jobs, not our families, not our hobbies, not money. If we're living as if time is his, we can legitimately ask him, like the psalmist does at the end of the poem, to establish the work of our hands for us. Only when we are dwelling in the everlasting, greater than time God can the work we do in the here and now be fully established. And when we're dwelling in God, That's when we have a piece of this everlasting to everlasting, this eternity. Time doesn't have to master us because God is the master. What is another word for to dwell? Inhabit. Live. Thank you, honey. Abide. Last week we talked about abiding in the vine. I didn't tell him that ahead of time. He's just smart like that. Jesus invites us to abide in him, the true vine. And God is our dwelling. This is the Old Testament. Dwell in God. New Testament. Abide in the vine. The easy, light yoke that Jesus promises has always been available. It's not an Old Testament, New Testament thing. It is when we are dwelling in God. So this is the key to this whole series, not just about time, but about every aspect of our lives. Every aspect of our lives belongs to God. We may not live like it, we may not think about it, but that is the truth. So in this series, we're not gonna be like, okay, so I'm gonna figure out this plan, how I can make more time in my day to make sure that I spend time with God. Because I have all of these other things and all of these other responsibilities, and I can't figure this out. Because we're not greater than time. We can't make more time. It doesn't work like that. So we're not looking for portions of our lives to give back to God, of our lives to give back to God. And by the way, little note, I've been saying it wrong during offerings. I keep saying, we're giving a portion of what God has provided to us. It's already his. We're just specifically dedicating a portion of his money to his specific work through this church. So this is true about all of our aspects. Our whole life and every aspect of it already belongs to God. And when we can get our brains into this perspective, not it's my life and I'm going to give God some of it, but all of this is God's and he's going to help me figure out how to portion it out, that is the way that we will experience Jesus' easy yoke and light burden, because he will give us what we need to do the things we need to do. And so, in this case, he will give us the time we need to do the things that he wants us to do. And if we don't have the time to do it, we probably don't need to do it. My time is not my time. So the goal of the trellis isn't to try to find some more time. It is to establish set times with God first. Sabbath, daily solitude with God, reading the Bible, praying, listening to God. And from there, discover how God wants us to use the rest of the time that he has shared with us. It's a gift. He's shared it with us. So if we want to know how he wants us to use it, we should probably spend time with him, right? Some of us have some experience doing, you know, spending quiet time with God and maybe even practicing some Sabbath. A lot of us don't. I kind of have had really good times of those practices and not so good. But if anybody, this isn't like a brag thing, but if anybody has any experience of quiet time, like some things that I'm curious, how has it gone for you? Trying to practice a quiet time, trying to set aside time to spend with God, whether it's a whole day or just a few minutes a day. Anyone want to share anything? It is tough. Why? Really, though?
No, not really.
Why do you think that is? Sometimes I think that's true. That is this. It's all that stuff is coming in because that's what he wants you to pay attention to. What are some other possible reasons?
The others that are around you in your environment,
Sometimes it's just a distraction. Sometimes it is another force that is trying to keep you from doing it. Right. Kind of like our praise festival a few weeks ago where everything seemed to be going wrong. It was a comedy of errors, and it was, I really believe it was because we were planning to come here and praise God, and that was it. And there are certainly spiritual forces that are not into our praising God. And there are also spiritual forces that are not into our recognizing that our time belongs to God, and we want to spend time with Him, and we want to get to know Him. And so there's definitely a balance of those things. So we could actually do probably an entire sermon series on any one of these topics that we're going to be covering over the next couple of weeks, and we could dig much deeper into that psalm, but we don't have time. So we sort of do, because there are many, many more weeks and many more years, hopefully, that we can spend together and learn together. And so we're going to just talk a little bit about Sabbath today, because Sabbath is big and daily quiet time is sort of small, but daily quiet time is almost like a piece of Sabbath in each day. And so I just want to talk about Sabbath briefly. John Mark Comer, who wrote one of the books that I've been using to help with this series, says, Sabbath is the primary discipline or practice by which we cultivate the spirit of restfulness in our lives as a whole. Sabbath, which for Jews is Saturday and for Christians has traditionally been Sunday, is a day of rest and worship. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. What that looks like is going to be different for different people. But it is the place to start the trellis, because when you can establish the peaceful, free, God-ordered life, you can only establish the peaceful, free, God-ordered life best when Sabbath is in place. If you don't have this pause in your week, every 7 days, it really doesn't matter the day, everybody has different work schedules and times that they could actually carve out for that time of rest and worship, but our bodies are, it's actually scientific. Our bodies are designed to work on this 7-day cycle, and if you get to the end of the 7 days and you don't have a recharge, like Barb was talking about, you will implode. And there's been a lot of research done on this. This isn't just some like weird religion should thing. This is actually scientifically proven. When you can get that peace, then you can start to work on all the other pieces of your life, because that's the place where you're really intentionally connecting to God, and He will inform you about all the rest of the stuff. So Sabbath is super important. Something about spiritual disciplines, nobody likes the word discipline because it sounds like punishment or at least boring and not fun. And a lot of times, spiritual disciplines start out as boring and not fun because we're not used to them, and they are discipline. They take work, they take practice. But when we were talking about the vine last week, we talked about pruning, and I think that spiritual disciplines are a way of self-pruning, which in some ways is nicer than being pruned. I think I would rather choose to prune off the things that are separating me from the vine than have that done to me. And so it's a way of saying yes to God and to His community and saying no to the things that keep me from the vine and that keep me from bearing fruit. God gave us Sabbath. It's a gift. So when we talk about God giving us time as a gift, part of that gift of time is actually Sabbath. And there are two things in the Old Testament where it kind of gives us the reason. Both of them are in Exodus. And one reason is God built it into creation. And that's why when scientists study this, they discover that there's a 7-day cycle that humans need. Exodus 20, verses 8 to 10, this is in the Ten Commandments. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the 7th day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son, nor daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For In 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. It's a celebration. It's a restful celebration or a celebratory rest. It means everything is complete. God is in charge. There's some teaching that I got probably in seminary about when a king in ancient, like, biblical times had finished conquering, had established his kingdom, his empire, and he was done, he would rest. And it was almost symbolic. This is good. This is done. I have completed it. It's all set. And when we observe Sabbath, we are acknowledging, God, you are king. I can leave all this stuff in my hands, all the stuff that I, all your, in your hands, all the stuff that I have to do next week, all the stuff that's coming up, all the problems and stressors and everything, I can just leave in your hands. You're in charge. I'm not going to fix this broken world by myself. I haven't done it yet. So I'm going to let you take care of it until you allow me to come back and work with you next week. The other place that God commands the Sabbath is in, oh, this, it's in Deuteronomy, same story, Exodus from Egypt, but Deuteronomy 5, 12 to 15. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. The second reason for Sabbath is so that we do not return to slavery and that we do not become slave drivers. This is new to me. This is a totally new teaching. I just read it last week. But I think it's very biblical because it's right there. That came right out of the Bible. The Israelites had spent 400 years as slaves. They had no idea what it was like to take a day off. They never had a break. They worked every single day. They didn't know how to rest. Even if they didn't like working every day, they didn't know how to take a break. So God had to command them to take one and say, this is what you do on it. Pretty much nothing. You rest and you worship. That was the only way to keep them from turning into slaves again or slave drivers. So I'm going to cut out some of this, but I want to land on that a little bit because I think there are some times where we feel like we know we should take a Sabbath, we know we should spend time reading the Bible or praying or that kind of stuff, and it's a should, and we don't get that it's a gift. And when we discipline ourselves to do it, we are free. We're actually not, it's not like, oh man, I have to sit here with my Bible and it's so boring and I don't understand it. And I would love to talk about how to read the Bible sometime, not this morning. But I would actually like to do a separate maybe workshop on a different day if people are interested in talking about how you can spend time with God, different ways to spend time with God. But Sabbath is a piece of eternity that God has formatted to operate within time. So it takes us, because we're within time, it takes us some time and some effort to figure out how to fit it in to our week. We are not going to get it right first try. I would say I'm fortunate. When I was growing up, my parents were very, you could say, strict about practicing Sabbath. And so my dad's a pastor. We would go to church. We would worship God together with our Christian brothers and sisters. And then we would go home and we would have lunch together. And my parents would take a nap, and my brother and I had to take a nap too or find something quiet to do, and then we would all read a book together in the afternoon, and then we would have popcorn and something small for supper, but it was very quiet, very low key. Sometimes we wanted to go shopping or go do something with our friends, and my parents would say, "Nope, this is the Lord's Day. You're going to stay home. You're not going to do any homework. You got to finish it on Saturday. Sorry." And I hated it as a kid, but I love that they did that now. Because I feel like even though I still struggle with Sabbath, it's given me a leg up. And I want to tell you a little bit about this week. So Monday is my Sabbath, because I'm kind of working, even though I'm worshiping too. But anyway, so Monday is my Sabbath, and I had just been reading about it. So this past Monday, I was like, okay, I'm going to take a real Sabbath. I'm not going to run errands. I'm not going to go shopping. I'm not going to do any of this other stuff that involves spending money or making other people do work or any of this stuff. I'm going to just rest. And so I spent some time reading my Bible, and I actually find working out kind of invigorating and restorative. And so I did some workouts, and I prayed, and I did some art projects, because I'm not an artist, but I like to pretend I am. And it was super relaxing and wonderful, and I was like, oh yeah, this is what it's supposed to be like. I'm going to tell everybody about this on Sunday. And then the rest of my week was ridiculous. It was crazy. And I just tell you that because I really think it doesn't mean, if we start practicing Sabbath, it doesn't mean that our weeks are going to necessarily always be less crazy. Some of them might be, because we might actually start to listen to God and figure and hear from him how he really wants us to use our time, and we might get less distracted by the time sucks that we don't really need to be doing every moment of every spare moment that we have. But when the week gets crazy, if you had a Sabbath first, it is a whole lot easier to get through, because you think, I had this time with God, he's going to get me through this, he's going to help me with this, this person that I have to meet with or talk to or interact with, God loves this person, and I'm just going to be there for that person right now, and now I'm going to move on to the next thing, and then the next thing. And I really felt like God, it was a crazy week, and I had a bunch of migraines, and that was kind of horrible, but God was there, and I was aware he was there because I had spent time with him on Monday, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow. Because I know I have that, because it's built into my schedule, so I know I have that to look forward to every 7 days, no matter how crazy it gets, I'm looking forward to it. And I'm free if something happens on a Monday and I need to help somebody, it's okay, because I've already built this into my schedule and I can say, okay, I'll just take this part of my Sabbath and I'm going to go help this person. I just can't emphasize enough how wonderful it is once it becomes a habit. And yeah, it takes a little work and it takes some sacrifice there, but we learn through the practice of Sabbath what we can still say yes to and what it's okay to say no to. Because we have to, because it's already built in. So here's the project for this week. I told you there was going to be homework. This week, I'll give you an option. You can, if you have a habit of one of these two things already, then work on the other one. But if you don't have either, then pick the one that seems less overwhelming. Fill in more of your grid, first of all, that you made with your days, weeks, months, years. Try to think of everything you can possibly think of that takes up your time, good, bad, ugly, whatever. Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, or whatever you guys do these days. I know Facebook is an old people's app now. That's the first thing. And then ask God to help you and choose either a daily quiet time to work on or Sabbath. Hint, tomorrow is a holiday. Not everybody gets to take tomorrow as a holiday, but if you do, might be a good opportunity to oh, hey, this is already a holiday. I'm going to practice one of these things or both of these things. If you're going to try Sabbath, try to clear a day. Even if you don't think that you can last an entire day without going online shopping or running an errand or whatever, if you can clear yourself 24 hours, you have something to work with. And you can say, well, okay, I made it 3 hours. That's pretty good, actually. You can make it an hour. That's good. Try to, during that time, whatever time you are able to do this, try to avoid activities that distract you from God. I don't know what those are for each of you. Everybody has different things. Some people, and sometimes it's a phase in your life. There was a time in my life where there were certain TV shows that I would not be able to watch because it would take my brain right away from anything remotely related to God. Now there are some that, in my particular case, they actually make me think about God more, because I tend to think theologically, and so it's sort of, it leads to worship. So just try to know yourself, but a lot of times we get distracted by shopping or social media or television, so try to avoid those kinds of things. Try to engage activities that connect you with God through your own character, personality, talents, reading, writing, art, having a good conversation with somebody. Sabbath is actually a communal practice, so that's why we gather together for worship. When the weather's better, gardening, if you have indoor plants, you can do that. Take some time to experiment with reading the Bible. The Bible doesn't necessarily read well like a novel. If you try to read it front to back, it's not going to work, especially the first time. But there are different ways that you can read it, that you can start to engage with it. If you want some tips from me before we have our hypothetical workshop about that, just feel free to ask me after church. Experiment with different ways of praying. If you are going to just do a quiet time during the day, try to pick a time that you can do every day for a week. Just see if you can do this for a week. Start small, like 5 minutes. Just try it. And try to do it every day and try to make it a little longer. 5 minutes to 6 minutes or 5 minutes to 10 minutes, depending on how overachieving you are. Spend some time praying. Spend some time reading the Bible. If you have your notebook, use it as a journal. Write about what you're noticing in the Bible, questions that you have. And then overall, Sabbath or quiet time, journal about your experience. What worked? What didn't work? What did it feel like? What did you love about it? What did you hate about it? What surprised you? What did you discover about God? And what did you discover about yourself? Those are the questions. I hope that you will take this seriously and really try it this week. We will take a tiny bit of time at the beginning of next week's sermon to hear from you a little bit about what your experiences were like. And hopefully, and actually, if you are in the Facebook group, the church, not the church page, but the church group, family group, if you feel like, you know, if you're trying quiet time and you have this great quiet time, and or you read something really interesting, or you had a question about something and you want to post it in the group and we can chat about it all together, that's cool too. So, yeah, let's try it and let's pray that God will meet us in our time with Him. Heavenly Father, we thank You for this time together. Time is such a big concept, we don't totally understand it, but we know that You are Lord of time, and if we are dwelling in You, if we are abiding in the vine, we are where You are. You are everlasting to everlasting. And so we actually don't have a limit on our time, which means that we can trust You to let us know what we need to do with the time that You are sharing with us. We pray that as we try this week to practice Sabbath or to spend time with You in the mornings or in the evenings or during the day, that You will Meet with us that we will feel your presence and hear from you, that you will encourage us and give us strength to do the things that we have committed to trying with you. We really want to build this trellis and get some sanity in our lives.